Thanks so much for coming today. Really, this is such a great environment to learn about human trafficking because it's so calm and refreshing to be walking amongst this natural, beautiful setting. And really, I feel blessed to be able to be here and have some time to be able to present to you what I've been working on now for almost 5 years. Come August, I've been involved with anti-trafficking efforts since 2009. And so just to give you a quick little background of myself, I'm actually from Southern California. I worked for an architecture firm out in Santa Monica, and I worked with a lot of high maintenance clients. I had a great boss, and my husband's job brought us up to Sacramento. And I started the life of a housewife with two sons, and always enjoyed being the best possible mom to my two kids. And I didn't realize, but at the time, I am faith-based. I was raised evangelical, Pentecostal. And I didn't realize at the time, but in 2005, I had had recurring dreams that actually were nightmares of my kids being abducted. And I was very protective of my sons. I have two close friends here who can really confirm that I am very protective of my sons, who are now 17 and 19. I had a recurring nightmare that my youngest son had been abducted. And I had seen polyclass situation. I had seen other numerous kids that had been abducted. And I thought maybe it was just a fear in my back, you know, just in my the back of my mind. But in this recurring nightmare, I knew where my son was. And he was on a yacht, shackled, nude, with tons of other little boys. And in my dream, I had told the SWAT team, this is my mind, that if they didn't go in quickly, that I was going to go in and take care of that myself. And I had even, in my mind, been in the news in my dream, and I had told the perpetrator who had done this, I said, you better hope that you find God before I find you, because you're messing with my kid. And when, in my dream, when the SWAT team went in and recovered these little boys from this yacht, there was my son coming out. And at the time, my son was 6 years old. And so it was just horrible to me. And I didn't know why I kept having this dream, this nightmare. And little did I know that in 2009, I would attend a conference specifically regarding sex trafficking of children. And it just hit me that here something had been birthed from a long time ago. It wasn't dealing with boys, but it used the connection of my sons to leave that seed in my heart. And so since 2009, I've been involved with California Against Slavery. If you know of California Against Slavery, we put forth an initiative that was unsuccessful the first time in 2009 to 2010. And it's okay, thank you. And so we tried again in 2011 to 2012. And that became the CASE Act, Californians Against Sexual Exploitation Act. And then it became Prop 35. And it really was everyone's initiative, everyone's proposition, because so many people, so many volunteers across the state of California became involved. They were given a burden and moved forward into action. And we have that song that we were able to sing last night in worship, and it was that God would take us from the singing into action. And 80% of our volunteers were faith-based individuals. So the church was mobilizing, and that was huge for us. We needed that. It was a lot of hard work. Sarah DeSalvo in the back. We finally got to meet face-to-face, and she was one of our wonderful, most ardent volunteers out of Santa Barbara. And so this was everyone's proposition. Everyone that became involved has a stake in Prop 35. So it's not my doing, and not Sarah's doing, it's not Peggy's doing, or Bernie, or anyone else. It's everyone's. And so taking on that momentum, we realized that it wasn't something that we could just go, okay, great job. We stop now. We've strengthened the laws. But in fact, we had to keep going. And so we launched California Against Slavery Research and Education. And so with that, I'm going to give you some stats, basically giving you the connection between sex trafficking and foster care children. So these are stats that are readily available for you on kidsdata.org, and they were actually updated September of last year. So we developed this specific PowerPoint in April of last year, and then we had to update it again in September. So if you can read that, it talks about the fact that each day in California, 70 children enter foster care. Every day. And sometimes that's not the first time for them. It can be the second time, the third time. They'll have multiple siblings in the system. And so they go back in. And why is it that they're going into foster care? Well, lack of essential needs, neglect, abuse, rejection, and abandonment. I know that being that I live in Sacramento County, I've talked to the social workers that do placement there, and they've specifically said, depending on the ethnicity of the child, right now the percentage of Hispanic children that are coming into the system are due to drug abuse cases. So the parents are doing drugs, thus neglecting their kids. And so we'll see the tie-in over and over and over. So here are the numbers as of September last year. You can see that I didn't necessarily add them up, but I did highlight the Hispanic Latino children because we are the majority in the system, unfortunately. So this really just paints the picture as to the need and what's going on. What's going on culturally? What's going on in our communities? This does not discriminate in ethnicity. This is across the board an issue. And where are our kids? Placements. Group homes, non-relative foster homes, and some that are classified runaways, and then the rest of the percentages, they're in kinship or they are being returned to their family members. So I can give you just a quick glimpse as to what's going on with our kids. You hear it in the news, all the bad of foster care placement homes, right? And in fact, that is what we're dealing with, our kids in juvenile hall that are going through that process. Those are their stories, the bad stories, the bad stories. When we set out to do a campaign specifically to highlight healthy, quality foster care homes, we had 3 families respond. In all of the state of California, only 3 wanted to be interviewed. We put this out there to the human trafficking community. We put this out there to the faith-based community. We put this out there on an individual word of mouth information and said, hey, if you know someone who's a foster care parent and they've done it successfully, let's have them share their story so we can highlight that. And really, people did not want to be interviewed. And that was very unfortunate because we have the need. There's an urgent need, and specifically for placement. And so what is the problem with that? Why wouldn't people want to be interviewed? That's a question. Why wouldn't people want to be interviewed? You can raise your hand and answer. Anyone? Yes.
Safety for the kids?
Safety?
I think they'd be afraid of being in the media because somebody might want to try to show another side of their family or something like that.
Okay, good. Anything else, Bernie? They might not really be a good foster parent, but also the stigma. They are good foster parents, but the stigma in the news is always that foster care parents are bad. They're rotten. They're the worst. And so, you know what? Best I be not celebrated and keep to myself, and I just keep doing the work quietly, right? And that's okay as well, but we really need people to step up, and so we need to have those champions to give us that example, to be that role model by which we aspire to be as well. And so that was unfortunate for us. We did have one family, and I will share that with you in a minute. Percentage of California prison inmates that were former foster care children. This was a survey done by the State Senate. in response to the overwhelming amount of money that is put into the foster care system, right? We're talking over, I believe, we've got close to 60,000 children. It's rounded off to 60,000 children in the state of California, and we're putting close to $40 billion into foster care. So who is keeping accountability? Why so much money? And where are these kids going? Well, 14% of those that responded to the survey in prison said that they were once foster care children. 19 of those entered 2 years or less after exiting foster care. And I'll give you a quick example of that. I have a young man who has become my emotionally adopted son, and he's currently in state prison. And this kid, call him my juvie kid, I'll bring it over. This is his CPS report. This child was abused, neglected, abandoned, and put into foster care. And at 6 years old, he was adopted. It was great. Sibling set, he and his younger brother were adopted, but in fact, adopted mother abused them. Went as far as to drop him off in another state so as to release herself of the obligation further. This child is now in state prison. No less than 2 years after exiting care, foster care, he's now in prison. So I'll read you a quick speech that he wrote for me. I've mentored him and been a part of his life since he was 16 and a half, and so being in juvenile hall. And so I want to read something to you so that you can see the need for these kids. He titled it Giving Your All, and he based that off of Luke 21, 3 and 4. And I'm sure if you're familiar with the Word of God, you will know what that is. So he says, okay, I've never written a speech before, so bear with me. My name is Kevin Jellum. I'm 19 years old, and I'm currently in San Quentin. I've been incarcerated since I was 16 years old, and I'm serving a 15-to-life term. I met Miss Dowling at juvenile hall. She was my tutor there. I feel God brought us together for a reason. As many of you know, or don't know, Rosario is a big part of the fight to help at-risk youth before it's too late. A lot of kids in the system are on the wrong path, bouncing from foster home to foster home with no sense of belonging, because all you're there for is the paycheck. We talk about the negative, the stigma, and off to the next house. But then there are some of us that aren't even that lucky. We're the ones that get thrown into group homes with no other purpose but to keep us out of society. A lot of futures could be saved with proper foster families. There's so many people nowadays in it just for the paycheck, not caring about the child, teenager, or young adult. And there's so many more people that can help. So many potential foster families out there don't realize what effect they can have on a kid's life. Your decision to become a foster parent could be the difference between some kid ending up like me or that same kid becoming a college graduate. Your decision to become a foster parent will make a difference. Just remember, there's a difference between doing your part and doing all you can. For an example, turn to Luke 21, verses 3 and 4. Are you putting in all you have, or are you just picking out of your abundance? I will end by saying, if you are capable of becoming a foster parent, please do change a life, Kevin Jellum. And I read that every now and then just to remind myself of why it is that it's important to care. It's important to share your life. And I loved what Eugene was talking about. Justice is a form of discipleship. You do have to be disciplined to be involved with teenagers because you need to discipline them. And it's important that we model discipline lovingly, but also that we would constantly be there. And so for this kid in particular, he realizes the impact and very graciously says that I've done something for him. This kid has nothing. He's in jail. He has nothing. But out of nothing comes something valuable. And he fashioned a rose for me out of what he does have. Tissue paper, toilet paper. And he made sure to even put some leaves on there. Isn't that awesome? I cannot hug him. I cannot be there and mother him. I can't be there by his side, but I can stay encouraging in an encouraging position by pen palling with him, and we call that bridge pal. So I'll talk a little bit about that as well. But these are our kids. These are our kids in the community. These are our kids that are involved in our kids' lives. These are our kids that will probably marry our children, our children's cousins. They're a part of our lives. And so if we're looking to have a good, strong life, we want to hurry up and help those that need it as well, need that helping hand. This is to paint a picture of our sex trafficked children. And this came straight from the report on human trafficking by the Attorney General that came out right before Prop 35 was voted into law. And it said, specifically, we've talked about the foreigners, the labor trafficking, and that's definitely an issue. That's something that we need to be paying attention to. But in fact, what this report showed was that 72% of the victims that were disclosing or a part of someone's report were actual U.S. citizens. And so these are our own kids. And definitely, I'm all for missionaries. I'm all for being in other countries and helping other countries. But when there's a bottleneck here with our own kids, we need to take care of our kids. And obviously, they have more resources available to them. There are countries that don't have foster homes or foster care, but we need to address it. So this is our sex trafficked children. As you can see, the boys enter at the age of 11 to 13. Why would you think that is a younger number, lower number than the girls? Why would you think that? Anybody know why that would be a possibility? Well, yes, go ahead. Well, there's differing opinions on it. We talk about the fact that when children are molested, when there's sexual abuse happening in the home or even outside of a home with an authority figure that knows them and is comfortable with the family, boys don't talk about it. But the age for boys is always seemingly more younger than our girls.
As far as being molested?
Child abuse. And so we'll hear of girls between ages 8, 9, 10, but it always seems that when the boys disclose, they're much younger. They're much younger. So there are differing opinions, but that is one that is out there. Victims being trained to call their sex traffickers daddies. Now, we probably in an average family don't understand this. I called my father dad, daddy, and I would definitely balk at this idea of calling some guy who wants to be my boyfriend or friend in my life, having me call him daddy. But in fact, if our kids that are being susceptible to this are foster care children, they don't have a father figure for the most part. They probably have mom's boyfriend who is a father figure or daddy figure, right? And they themselves become the term wifey. Now, I've heard high school kids goofing around with this term, you know, a girl to another girl, she's my wifey, just goofing around. But the reality is that that's an actual term that's derogatory. And so I think as average community member, we want to be on the lookout for that. And with our own kids or youth groups that are goofing off with this term, I know at the church that I attend, I've heard some of the girls calling each other that, and I've cringed, and when I get involved in the conversation, you know, I kind of soften up the conversation to let them know, you know, that's that's a derogatory term, and they're still young, they don't get it. But I just tell them, you know what, there's a template for sex trafficking. And if we put that template over your conversation, you're kind of, at that point, you could be susceptible to that. Because you're already comfortable with the lingo, and someone starts to set themselves up as your boyfriend and starts calling you their wifey, you're kind of leading into that. Just be cautious with it, right? So it's a little food for thought. So here we've combined it, the connection. Foster care children, sex traffic victim. So obviously we've been doing this now since 2009, and I've been in juvenile hall since 2010, and I would say that 80% of the kids that I've tutored or mentored or been a part of their lives there, or even with the diversion program a pilot program that Peggy and I were involved in, they were foster care kids or wards of the state. So we've been seeing the trend. What is the connection? Neglect, previous child abuse, sexual trauma, exploitation, but mainly the basic need for attention and love. And the picture at the bottom, these are all juveniles that are missing in the state of California, Northern California, from Stanislaus County up. And I especially wanted to include the boy in there because we don't talk enough about boys when it comes to sex trafficking. And since I've been involved in this, that's the dream, that's the nightmare that connected me to this issue, my sons. And so I've come across boys that have disclosed in juvenile hall, you know, and there's no placement home for them. Because you have a child that's being exploited by men, and you need to find a foster care home or a group home that's going to be able to take him where the other boys are not going to give him a hard time, or the group home individuals that are running the group home are not going to address his needs appropriately. And so I was called by a social worker who said one boy was in the lobby of the children's receiving home for almost three days, because they could not find a placement home to take him. So we're dropping the ball. So it's important that we stay connected. So this is what we found through our research, is really what is it that needs to be done? We know the connection, sex trafficking, foster care child. We know where they're at. So we look to see who are the people that came on board to our campaign, who are the people who are continually giving of themselves, very purposely, the faith-based community. And so here we are saying, we've researched specifically to see what is out there in other states. And so I want to read to you the top paragraph. Prior to 1875, the faith community was the institution that dealt with the mistreatment of children. We would like the faith community to get involved again with the mission of helping abused and neglected children. This is straight off of Texas, the state of Texas social services website. So the state is saying, we would like for you, faith-based people, get involved again. And so another state that has this, Georgia. Another state that has this is Arkansas. We don't have that in California. But you know what? Why do we have to wait? We don't have to wait for the state to say, come get involved. We know this. We're here already. We're learning about it. We're coming to Santa Cruz. We're going to Fremont, California. We're going wherever there are conferences that talk about what is it that the church can do to fight human trafficking. And that is what we're looking at. Why not prevent it before it happens, right? Save our children the harm. Save more children from going through this potential issue in their family, in their lives. If we talk about the percentage of victims that have come through the process of being helped, wraparound resources, have received justice, and now are speaking and helping us in this fight, that's a small percentage of survivors. We're losing so many girls. We're losing so many boys, drug addicted, to violence, to death. We're losing those. And we're getting a small percentage of survivors. but we're putting money, we're looking at homes, we're looking at shelter, we're looking at resources. Why not, we know where they're at, address it before we get to this stage. We would have far more survivors come through that process. So, prevention, intervention, and restoration. So this is what we developed, is a HOPE model. We've looked at other organizations that have done this. And the organization that is doing a great job is actually out of Georgia. And it's huge. Their model is ridiculously huge. So we simplified it. And we went with best practices and said, what is the faith-based community good at? What is the church good at? Small group ministry. So the HOPE model is a small group ministry. So we ask one family in each church, just one family, to have a support team. So there's the H for HOPE, the HOPE team that helps support the family, the O for the outreach ambassador, the person that is leading that ministry for them. The P is for the pastoral support. Obviously, leadership needs to have the buy-in in order to promote this as well. And the E is for constantly exploring opportunities by which we can show people that, in fact, this is a great, tangible option to prevent human trafficking and that anyone can become involved, right? And so this model specifically is something that Harbor Light Church, I just did a presentation for them, I want to say a little over a month and a half ago. There is another campus in Sunnyvale that I did a presentation for. They have the HOPE model. In just doing the HOPE model presentation, one Saturday morning, we recruited three families that morning. How awesome is that, right? That's all we need, is just put the information in front of people, and then they come. You know, they follow through. Did you have a comment?
Did you mean you recruited three families to become foster parents?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And you had a comment?
Earlier.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have a licensed foster care provider. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about the survey.
You didn't know about the...
We put
it out there. Yeah.
So you asked what were reasons people didn't come forward, and I suppose one of the reasons was that maybe some of us didn't know about it.
Yeah.
Two of my children are here.
Oh, that's awesome.
But, yeah.
That, well, and we did.
One other reason is simply not knowing. The other thing is, you know, and I'll say this too, why would you not want somebody to come in with you? I can tell you that as a parent, having both biological children and adopted children, as a parent of my biological, I don't know if I want people coming in and seeing if I'm doing it right. So I don't think it's too much different for somebody who's in foster care, because I don't know any expert parents. I don't pretend to be one.
Yeah.
And so if somebody's going to come in and talk to me, and I might be a little leery about, who's perfect at parenting, I don't know.
Well, success is measured by your children that are going through, right? Yeah. No, that's good. That's good feedback.
I'm saying, why would I not want to?
Yeah.
Because, what if somebody asks me how I'm handling whatever and I don't give the right answer?
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are not all that many right answers, I don't think.
Yeah, and that's okay. You're good. Well, I'd like to connect with you because we're actually the organization is actually showcasing some families. Currently, we're recruiting more families. Queen Latifah Show is going to be highlighting some families that CAS Research and Education recommends for her to highlight for the month of May. So I'd love to connect with you and see if that's a story that they would like to follow up with. So we'll talk at the end. No, I'm recruiting you. We're good. Yes.
I'm curious, what church in Sunnyvale did you connect with?
I got the name of the church at the tip of my tongue, Pastor Seth, and it is in Sunnyvale, and they have two campuses. It will come to me.
Okay.
Sorry. It will come to me. It is.
Hopefully before
12. Thank you. I had very little protein because I ran out of the lunchroom. So what does that mean? As she mentioned, she's raising her biological children and our foster care children, and that's awesome. And so we're not looking for perfect people. We're looking for specifically healthy quality homes to showcase, to say there's value in this family because these children were brought in, supported, nurtured, and guided. And what is the value that that child can bring? I can tell you that these are actual, except for the lady all the way on the left and the family on the bottom, these are actual foster families. And the family all the way to the right is a family from my church. They're no longer there at our church, but their children were adopted out of Sacramento County, both foster care children. And they're going to go through the process again. I think they want to expand their family. And so that is something that commitment, perseverance, hard work, trial and error, it's parenting. And so here you're taking on the responsibility of someone else's child who then becomes your child. And that's what we're looking to do, is for churches to say they are our children. We want to help. We want to intervene. And this is the time. You want to prevent human trafficking? This is perfect. The resource is there, correct? There are resources. Where is the shelter? Your home, right? And we know exactly where these kids are. So the placement is there. Alameda County specifically looks for concurrent planning. So if you're in Alameda County, they choose to bring in a child and say, this child will not be moved more than one or two times, so that the damage for that child's identity and well-being is minimal. Sacramento County is looking for emergency placement homes specifically because their goal is to return the child home, right? And they do concurrent planning as well, but they're definitely, the need is great. When you have a child, a 14-year-old who has been sexually exploited and we can't find a placement home for them and they're sleeping in a receiving home lobby, that's a problem. So where are our kids? What are we doing? What do we need to do? And this is really it, is let's go from singing about justice into action. And so I want to ask you, let you ask some questions, but we are going to do a quick activity, and this involves our kids that are currently incarcerated. So I'm going to ask Peggy Fava to come up and share a story of one of her girls. I now work with Peggy in Sacramento Juvenile Hall, and she runs an awesome organization called Bridge Network. But I wanted her to share the story because she is like a mother to so many kids. So go ahead.
Okay, you guys can hear me?
Yes.
They're talking about prevention. We're kind of on the intervention side with the youth detention. And 70% of the kids or the girls primarily that we work with have been involved in some type of solicitation or exploitation. And 98% have been sexually exposed to some kind of trauma. So what she's talking about, this model, I think is the key to prevention. And what we're doing is mostly the intervention because they've already been exploited. But we're trying to prevent them to go to prison. So one girl in particular, there's so many stories. I mean, we can just talk about all the sad stories.
Right.
But one in particular, her name is Kiana. She was exploited at age of 13. She was one of those girls that you looked at and you just saw a little girl. She had a very soft-spoken, she just was looking for love. Never knew her father, so the foundation was one that was never there. It was never rooted, and so she had a stepfather that entered into a new home. She was the eldest, and was molested at 5 years old. So she has a CPS case, probably similar to Nate's, and just neglected, never really reached, exploited by her own mother, really. She was labeled with OCD and all the other mental health disorders that we give these kids because the trauma wasn't dealt with when they were earlier in their life. So she was expressing it in a way and out of control, got kicked out, turned into a runaway, and just kept going into different juvenile hall probably about 11 times and just missed, just really missed. And so with somebody like her, we want to stay connected with her. She was missed in the system. And what the HOPE model is really going to do is really kind of bridge that gap before they get to where we're dealing with them. And we want to still kind of stay connected with these kids. And there's still hope for this girl. She's 19. She'll be 19 next month, actually. And she was exploited, and she actually was participating in a FBI sting in Sacramento County. She actually helped the FBI put away her pimp, which is very rare. That doesn't happen. And so she trusted the system. The system just continuously let her down. And she pleaded with the FBI agent and says, please put me in a group home, because she didn't want to go home. She was being exploited, abused, neglected. There was no love there. And so she just was out in the streets and essentially got, you know, she pretty much was returned home and came back and says, okay, I'm out of here. So she took off and she got involved with some kind of gangs that were helping her, but they were also exploiting her. She got back into that lifestyle and got involved into a more severe crime, which was kidnapping of her John. And so if you can't hear me, just let me know. I got to speak up louder. I do have a big voice. So now she's looking at mandatory sentencing. She was 16. She was going to be exploited by a John, which is an exploiter who wants to be using services. He was treated as the victim, and she was treated as the kidnapper. They kidnapped this kid, this guy, for his money. She was just there, and she's doing 9 years mandatory in Chowchilla, now transferred to Corona. So what we do is, how do we keep this kid encouraged? We just throw her away? No, we don't. Because she started as a little kid. Mm-hmm. She still is. She's just a little precious girl who really never had a foundational of love. And she loves the Lord. And she wants people to hear her story. She says, I want people to... She wrote me a letter just this last week and says, can you write to Ellen DeGeneres? I want her to hear my story. And everybody that meets her says, you don't belong in this prison. She doesn't. And she says, I know. And so she gets suicidal at times. And what do we do with that? What does the church do? And so we have a Bridge Pal program. Actually, she's the one who kind of formulated that with her kid, because all of her kids were getting transferred to prison. Not all of them, but
there's some.
And we get connected with them because we have a mentoring program. And so you just don't stop. You continue. And she goes, you know, let's call it the Bridge Pal. Let's just write to them. And so basically we have some kids that were serving adult sentences, which is what my Kiana is serving, because it's a mandatory kidnapping charge. There's no wiggle room. And she got a good deal according to her public defender, but we argue that. And we're still trying to get justice for her. So the way we want to engage the church community is to continue this mentorship via Pen Pal, and that's what we call Bridge Pal. And so some of these kids, in fact, I think that stat is low.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's more, just from my personal experience, more like 70%.
Well, we always try to go conservative because we don't need to further scandalize the issue. It is scandalous enough already, and we want to always stay with the numbers that are consistently out there.
And so how, you know, what we do is let's just write these kids. If you don't want to personally get involved, how easy is it to write some encouragement words? Hey, you know what? I heard about your story. You know what? I want to encourage you. You know what? There's people out here who care about what's going on. And if this is, and they don't get any letters, okay? Especially the girls. Guys do, I hate to say it, they do. I'm not trying to sway it away from the guys. But,
I know my kid does.
But the girls, they don't have the support system. They just don't. And I don't. It's sad that they don't. So only people that write to Kiana is me and other Bridge Pal corresponders. So
that's our activity
today.
Is I'm going to give you a piece of paper, and you can either choose to write to Kiana or to my kid, Kevin, and just write something encouraging. And that way, they know that they're not forgotten, and also that it's not just Peggy, Rosario, and Bernie that care about them in the community, that there are many others who are rallying to keep them encouraged as well, to do their time, to stay as close as possible to the positive, get what they're going to get out of it, and let's move forward. And so, really, I appreciate Peggy and all the work that she's been doing in Juvenile Hall. I want to let Bernie stand up and introduce himself as well. So please, brother. Sure.
He's our he leads our male programming, and he's doing the gang intervention. There's a big tie-in with trafficking and gangs and getting these kids more aware. So he's leading a lot of that, and he's our program director with Bridge Network.
And it helps that I'm a former gang member.
Yes, definitely.
Career criminal. Spent 15 years in prison and gang banging in prison. My life has changed drastically, and I've been out for about 9 years, clean and sober. I was broke free from drug addiction, and just answering the call God called me to do, serving these kids, makes it a lot easier that I was one of them, and I'm able to change my life. And so it's a great blessing to be a blessing, and the impact that we're having with these two superheroes right here is awesome, and we remind it every day that it's a great work, and it's an honor to serve with them. They're both great, so I just use my experience and wherever the Lord leads me in wisdom to share my experience and changing our life.
Thank you, Bernie. Thank you. Yes, I'm going to tear one. So Peggy's going to tear out a lined piece of paper. There's some pens in the back. I'd like for you to just either choose Kiana or Kevin, and just encourage them if you can. This is something that is your action item while you're in here. Your action item is to go take this to your church. The Hope Model, the flyers are there. If you want some further information, we have interns who are here who are in the Bay Area, Alameda County.
I'll write it on the whiteboard.
And we also have interns in Sacramento County. I myself have ended my position with CAS Research and Education as of 2 weeks ago, I believe. And so I'm really here to introduce the new person that is taking over my spot. And she threw out her back. She dislocated her knee. And so she is not here. She is here on campus, but she's not here in the room. And so her card is there in the back. Her name is Beth Dillon, and she's just an amazing person. And so I would love for you to email her, let her know that you participated. I'm going to give her all your information that you've put on the back, and she will be following up, letting you know what is going on, what you would like to learn more about. But basically, that's the gist of it, is that what our kids lack is hope. What our kids lack when they become young adults in prison is hope. And so that's what inspired the Hope Model, is to really, we want to be that springboard to preventing our kids from turning into adults who are incarcerated. So don't worry about mailing. I have pre-stamped envelopes for everyone. Yes, yes. So if anyone has any questions or comments, yes.
Can we go back a couple slides to where you decided to talk about why your kids were targeted? I just wanted to get
the Is it the connection? Okay. Any other questions? Yes, Sarah.
Sorry.
They cannot.
And we, if you want, you can put your address, but we typically get all of the correspondence.
So So do you want to put the Slider Center address? So this is what we offer to people who are comfortable with it and would like to continue to be their bridge pal. We want to know that that's the child that you want to be corresponding with. We actually have a new kid, Mikey, who is Bernie's favorite. I'm joking. He's a new kid that's going on to, 30 to life? Gang affiliated and shot a rival gang member, and it's a mandatory sentence. But this child, I asked him to write a little bit about himself, and I told him, describe yourself in 300 words. And so I just read you just the top real quick. As a child, I would say that I'm different from a lot. I was born in Chowchilla, and neither of my parents were in my life growing up. My mom would get out of prison for maybe 3 months, then go back in for 3 years. My father was just never in the picture. I still don't know if the man my mother told me was my father is my father, because my family denies it. He has a twin sister. So we worked with Mikey. She worked with Melinda, his twin sister. And so Chowchilla is a female prison. So he was born, he and his sister were born in prison. And now, generation, he's entering prison. And so these are our kids. You can either choose Mikey as well. But what we do is we typically say you can write to them and you can send it back. We'll send it out with the address of our center. Or if you're comfortable with it, we would just like to know who you want to correspond with. We will give you their address. You correspond with them, but we just want to know if you're comfortable with it to go back to your home or a P.O. box, that's fine as well. But we just want to keep track of who's corresponding with our kids so that we know if there's another child that needs, or young adult that needs correspondence, maybe we encourage someone to take that child as well. So she will put up the address for you and the names of our kids. So you can have that choice. But that's your action item while you're in here. But we'll take care of addressing the envelopes. Any other questions? You had one?
What I really love is when you share about who you are and why you're writing them, they just want to know more about you than them, and then they'll share when they return their correspondence to you. Just encourage them. Hey, guys, I love you. Or, you know what, I heard about your story and the beautiful mountains of Santa Cruz, and I was really touched by that. I want to just encourage you guys to just stick this out. And if you want to put scriptures, because a lot of them we
right.
spoke to.
Just to give you an idea. Yes, that's fine. And in fact, are we allowed to write in red pen? Yeah, so that's good. The other thing is that, like Mikey, he's locked down for 23 hours of the day. And currently, I believe he only has a Bible. So he's reading that, which is great. But I try to make as elaborative and descriptive my emails to him. My email turns into a letter for him, Sac County Sheriff. I can email him. They print it out as a letter and give it to him. So my address is attached to it. Everything is attached to it. They have to verify my email address. So it's a process. But if you're to write to them, we can take care of that for you. Sorry, you were interrupted. So how was, yeah. What did you do for your own child?
Oh God!
Did you give up?
No.
No. So you show up?
I kept showing up.
You stay there?
I did.
You love?
Yeah.
That's awesome. And that's what we do for our kids.
Yeah.
We show up. We stay there. We love them. You know, that's what we do. And
did they respond?
Yes.
They
do, very much do. Mikey, he's such a funny guy. Kevin wants to call me mom. I said, I can be substitute mom. I won't replace your mom, but I can be substitute mom. Mikey writes off his letters with P.S. Love you guys. He himself has said, oh, I was a bad kid. I was a bad kid, right? Kevin has said, you know, he did end up in a group home that was faith-based. But he was already so messed up emotionally that he didn't want to give. So he ran away. And so, yes, that's the truth. Peggy and I have a sweetness girl that we work with. 21, 22?
22 in July.
22 in July. Boy, she's a hot mess. But we're just there. She Facebooks messages, text messages me almost every day. And if I don't respond quickly enough, she's a little annoyed. But you know what? It's okay. So we just love. We're there. We don't give up. And eventually, like Bernie, they have this beautiful conversion. And they are that coal that's pressed under pressure and turns into that gem. That's what it is. That's what it is. And so what beautiful Laura is doing already and setting the model as a foster care parent, she's just there. She's providing shelter, resources, you know, and that's, if you can't do it, you can be part of the HOPE model to support. Yeah, thank you, Laura. I'm actually the outreach ambassador for a family at my church, and so I lead the HOPE team at my church. And the couple that I recruited to be foster adopt family are getting a sibling set. And so we're excited. My little team is amazing, and they're all excited. And unfortunately, the husband and the wife, she cannot have her own children. And so she's gone through the grief. And we had a nice little celebration for them and just encouraging them, excited for them, being their HOPE team. And she texted me probably within 15 minutes after leaving my home and said, thank you so much for that. It felt like a baby shower. That's something she's not going to have for a biological child. And to her, to have a support team, you know, one of us is going to be her 24-hour crisis person on the phone. Another person, we're going in on some mattresses for her children that are going to be placed in her home. And so she and her husband get to focus on some things, and we help support them in other things. And so the dynamic of the group is really awesome. One of the spouses in one of the couples, it was actually a foster care child himself. And so understands the dynamic. And so we're already planning things. We've been planning things. But we're training. We're educating. And so that we can continually be that wraparound support for them. It's important. That's the success. To have crisis support, to have emotional support, training support, and sometimes financial support. That's it. So we're just an extension of their family as a HOPE team. So if you could take this model back to your place of worship, this would be a great thing to introduce. It's just another small group ministry. And in fact, when I presented it to my pastor, I've presented it three times, three different pastors. And he was on sabbatical for about 3 months. And when he came back, he said, you know, we had a meeting. And he said, you know, I think that we can do this. And I said, well, Pastor, it's already been done. It's been happening. We just haven't had your blessing, but we're doing it. And so know this, we want your blessing because we want you to champion it in the church. And so the family is going to have a video and give their testimony, and then we're going to be able to be a resource in the back for those that are interested. And that's enough. Just get the information in front of people and to see if they're interested. We're always surprised, but it's really God. We're always surprised when people actually say, I've been thinking about this for some time. I've been fantasizing about this. I think God placed this as a burden on my heart for 2 years now, or, you know, whatever it is. But people come forward. And so I was able to recruit 5 families within about 5 or 6 months, and I'm not a professional. But I know how to sell a product that I absolutely believe in. And I absolutely believe in helping our teens, helping to prevent sex trafficking. And so that's my passion. That's where it comes from. So any other questions? Yes.
Do you have any experience, like, I have 3 kids still at home, and how does it work bringing
It is done. Our family that was recruited out of Alameda, our video, I think he mentioned that I'm not going to be able to show the video here, but if you go to our website, CASRI.org, the family that was recruited out of Alameda County, they got two phone calls within 45 minutes when they were doing a presentation for us. They have their own children already. They've been trained. The mother is a stay-at-home mother, and so she has the flexibility, the time management to better understand the dynamic of how she's going to introduce this to her biological child and how to bring them into the picture. And but it's training. It's a lot of training and support. The church supports her. But one child that was placed in their home, and if you're able to watch the video, when the child came to their home, he was not speaking. He was just a little guy, and he was not speaking. And so they thought maybe he hadn't been addressed for having, speech issues, or maybe just being mute, because he came from a very neglected family. And within hours of playing with their biological son out in the backyard, and so the child became therapy for the other child. The child started to speak. So what does that tell you? He was traumatized. His identity was stripped. As warped and twisted and really deficient his family structure was, it was his family. And so he was traumatized, he was displaced, and he comes into a place where he doesn't know who these people are. He shuts down. And so the child, the biological son, playing with him, coaxing him, just being there was the therapy that the child needed. So even our kids sometimes, we don't give them enough credit for being able to handle situations, but they can certainly take on a nice role. I recruited a pastoral family out in northern Sacramento, and both the boys came to the meeting when I came to talk to the parents. And the older boy said, well, I want a little sister, because I want to stay to being big brother. And the younger brother says, well, I want to be the big brother, though, too. And they said, well, then we choose a child that's younger. They're making decisions, but they're involved. And I think if you involve biological children, get their input, get their feedback, that always helps, obviously, because it shows that you're making a decision along with them. Some will not want it. I've asked my sons for a long time if I could be a foster care parent, and my youngest said, not really. And my older said, yeah, that's okay, but can I get an older sister? He wanted somebody that was older than him. And so they've never been on the same page over it. They're almost out of the home. So then I can make a decision with my spouse. But we have to be mindful of how our biological children will take to it as well. And
I was just thinking the interaction
Yeah. And I think preparing them, you can even take the kids to the orientations. Some orientations are made that way. I know that I've heard of one in San Joaquin County, even I believe in San Jose, there's one where they talk to the kids as well. Anything else? Any other comments or questions? Yes.
Two questions. First of all, do you have to own a home?
You do not. You just have to have a room available for them, separate from any other child or any other person. It has to be just for them. Well, you have to have a certain amount of daycare provided as well. So it's a little bit different for each county. What county would you be in?
Santa Clara.
Yeah, I believe you definitely with Santa Clara. They're looking at possibly, I want to say, Help One Child is the representative there for Santa Clara. And I'm not really certain on their guidelines, but I know that for Sac County and Alameda County, so long as daycare is provided and sufficient hours are made for the child, then you should be fine. But always, maybe you want to take some time off and really work on nurturing that relationship first and introducing the child to the home to better support that transition for that child. So something to think about. Anything else? Yes. It's on CASRI, so www.casre.org. And in fact, the very first page on the CASRI website is Kevin Jellum's letter. It's the first first page. Are you kicking us out, Mark?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. My goodness, of grace. Anything else? Are we good? That shows everything that has to do with our kids in the state of California. It's a census, but it does talk about foster care. Thank you so much for coming. Please make sure that you've signed up so that we can keep track of the attendance, okay? And leave your letters in the back or give them to Peggy or Bernie or myself.